Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 6, 2005. Today's session is entitled Hearing the Call, the Discarded Object as Medium, presented by Steve Ringo. Disc number RIS-2005-01.
We'll talk about that piece too. Maybe we can give it a name, find a name, or maybe we can just get rid of it and take it back to the third level and whatnot. So, does anyone remember the key word for this morning's short little meditation after breakfast? Let's put it this way. What do you remember about her little short?
Something was fuzzy.
No. Fuzzy was one word she used.
Yeah, a quantum.
Quantum. There it is. That's the word.
Particles.
Quantum particles and fuzzy. What was she saying about that? Anybody?
Those different ways of being, and you could be a quantum person.
Different ways of being in matter. So matter and quantum physics does different things. And chemistry, I think she alluded to. People the same way. I love the way you said it. So people also have this chemistry that changes every time you wake up, every day, every time you meet a new person. I like the way she put it in a very succinct way, and kind of preserving the mystery of it all too. In some ways, I thought right away, this is what we're trying to do here too, is find a way for, does your brain see things once in a while, an object, or a photo, or a painting, or a person, and in this place, in this class, in this course, we're talking mainly about objects, and how do you see things. Over time, over the years, I've started to see things that I never used to notice. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't take any certain pride in it, but I do take pleasure in it. And the pleasure can be seen as a gift from God and from just being a human being and from having, eyeballs that expand the perception. So if you take nothing else away from this time that we've been doing it, I'd ask you to just push your boundaries, and last time we talked about giving yourself permission to see things or to take something or to listen to that object that might be lost. And today I'm suggesting maybe even just to let go, push the boundaries out a little bit, and what are some of the things around me that I could see that I don't see? I have a hard time walking into any place where there's machinery anymore, and I'm not a mechanical person really, but I see machinery now that I never used to see. Mm-hmm. Garbage, compost, sort of the cast-offs. And I know garage sailing. How many of you like to garage sale?
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
That's sort of the same idea.
How many adore
become
it?
Yeah, it's become a little more of a consumer exercise. Go ahead.
I have to stay away from it. Yeah. I have a house clear full already.
Well, that's like me too. I have to stay away from some of these places where I know I find things.
Have you seen the place in Wenatchee where they decorated the whole outside? Mm-hmm. There's bottle caps like solid across the fence huge square feet and reflectors like on bicycles and insulators. And
is it public art or is it somebody's private home?
It's their private home, but you can walk all the way around it. And you can even sneak in. They let a gap in the fence like that, and they've done it on the inside too.
Wow, that's very good.
It's totally amazing. It's wonderful.
I like that. There's a house
I think it's in Ellensburg.
I know the one in Ellensburg.
It's in Ellensburg, yeah.
That's the one. I've been there. Yeah. Good.
Did they do that?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, if I were a clinician, I'd probably say they have an obsessive compulsive thing about stuff. And I know, I think I have some of that myself too, so. But from an artist's point of view or an art point of view, that's something that's a passion for them, mm-hmm. and they see mm-hmm. those things. Let's look at this poem here. Could you help me pass them out there?
Yeah.
That's a poem. Just put a few here for Elijah. He doesn't want room. Jorge Luis Jorge. Is that how you say it in Spanish?
Yeah.
And from Spain, it's called Shinto. And while we're hearing this, see if you can think of your versions of what he's saying. What are some of those examples in your own experience for what he does here? Shinto. When sorrow lays us low, for a second, we are saved by humble windfalls of mindfulness or memory, the taste of a fruit, the taste of water, that face given back to us by a dream, the first jasmine of November, the endless yearning of the compass, a book we thought was lost, the throb of a hexameter, the slight key that opens a house to us, the smell of a library or of sandalwood, the former name of a street, the colors of a map, an unforeseen etymology, the smoothness of a filed fingernail, the date we were looking for, the 12 dark bell strokes tolling as we count, a sudden physical pain. 8 million Shinto deities travel secretly throughout the earth. Those modest gods touch us and move on. I like the way he frames the first section of the poem with sorrow at the top and then physical pain at the end of that first section or stanza. And the things in the middle are not necessarily painful, are they? The kind of various parts of life. What are your impressions, just right off the bat, knowing there are absolutely no right answers here? What impressions do you have just hearing that or reading it, perhaps for the first time?
The times when he says, when sorrow lays us low, and sometimes you can have sort of all the breath knocked out of you, and you just pull yourself back with these small experiences, you know, just focus on one small moment, one small thing.
Good, I like that. When you just said that, it popped into my head, over in Narnia, in the playground, they're making that climbing wall.
Yeah.
Kind of like it knocks you low, but now you're climbing that wall, one little, what do they call them in climb?
Handhold.
At a time. And these are some of our handholds for him. And what are they for you? Anybody have a thought?
My dog.
Your dog?
When you come home, the dog always says hi. Mm-hmm. It's like no matter what else goes wrong. There's the wet nose and the eager eyes and you know, he's wiggling all over. It's like, oh, life is good.
Yeah. Where you been? Dog never says, where you been? You're late. Yeah. Always starts fresh.
I like the smell of the library.
Yeah, it's not a great thought.
That is good.
I like the former name of a street. I found that one of the streets near where I live has had two former names, and they were much more appropriate than the one it has now.
Yeah, the former name makes the whole line of that poem different. If it was just the name of a street, we would think of that, but the former name, something's lost.
Yeah.
Something's lost.
Old naps.
Unforeseen etymology. Again, just something is lost or missed, or kind of shrouded, perhaps. There are several of these where something's a little bit hidden or mysterious or cryptic. And in the very end, I think he sort of tips our hand. There's quite a hinge in the poem because the last stanza sort of comes out of nowhere. It almost seems like, where did he come up with that? I think that whether it's literally or not, you don't need to do that, but all these deities, and Shinto evokes this image of mystery or the Zen-like, something you can't figure out, but that these small gods, it's like he says, I think he says, Shinto deities, these modest gods that touch us, these little moments, these little lost memories that are kind of fuzzy. Who said fuzzy? Is that Mom? Or quantum, always changing, or kind of morphing into something else, that these, we do climb on them. And it's kind of odd to even think of them as handholds, is that right? Mm-hmm. That they're that strong that you can even handhold on something that's that amorphous, or quantum, or fuzzy. But we do.
What is the throb?
What is the throb?
What is this thing, a machine?
Well,
the rhythm in a poem.
Yeah, hexameter.
Da, 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 you know, in a rhyming poem.
In a poem, hexameter, da, 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 iambic da, da, pentameter. Da,
da. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it'd be a six beats.
I don't think I've heard that word before.
I like the word throb, and you think of a heart, but then it's in the poem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What I really like, too, in the ending is that he's bridging the seen and the unseen, or the surface, like these Shinto deities that are kind of shady and moving about all over the world, and yet there's something about their present, but they're hidden. These memories, the memory is very fickle and kind of shrouded and in and out, right? And not very trustworthy for most of us, the memory, but there's something very powerful about it too. The visible and the invisible. And I think there's something about doing this kind of stuff, going up to the third level and finding these, what we called lost things the other day, and reclaiming them. You could say it's all very pretend, but you could also say that there's something I'm doing here that takes root in my brain as symbol and as memory, but also as tangible. And then you redefine the part of your memory, the part of your experience.
Do you know
how many babies woke up on
George Herbert's poem,
oh.
Glory Be to God for Dappled Things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a great poem.
That's running through my mind.
Yeah. That is great. And the pulley also, when you said George Herbert, I immediately went to the pulley.
Can I get the books in the library?
Sure.
Grab that.
You bet.
The word mindfulness, I really like that, because that's different from memory. Real different. That's like an awakening at the moment where you suddenly see something.
Drip.
Or hear or smell or touch or... And I don't know.
I agree.
I go through life in fog, and so when I have mindfulness, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, mindfulness goes beyond just being focused or awake or.
It's kind of like something that wakes you.
Mm-hmm.
All these things.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yes.
I'm wondering what for me it's a puzzle. Endless yearning of a compass. What's the yearning of a compass problem? What that image
I was thinking the desire to travel, you know, like the compass is always leading somewhere.
Okay.
As a person? Okay. Yeah. The compass is up. The compass won't go anywhere without a person.
Mm-hmm.
So it could, I also have wondered about that line, if it's the needle itself, too, that the needle never really is stable or still, and it even wobbles this way and that way, and there's this whole thing of true north, more magnetic north, and seeking some kind of direction. So it could be the compass that's personified, or the people that need the compass.
Mm-hmm.
I think both.
Maybe the needle is wandering, looking, not the compass, the whole compass.
Uh-huh.
I just had, what's that after that?
The endless yearning. It never arrives either, I guess. The compass is always pointing on, like time, you know. It never stops. I don't know. That was a start, and I want to hear from those who went up there the other day. How many do we have that went up there? How is this working for you as far as having brought the stuff back? how did that go on that day, now that we're 2 days later? And when you look, have you walked by and seen your things?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking? Tell me where you're
where
at.
Where are our things? How come I haven't seen them?
Well, they're on the building where the
house
is.
That's okay. We'll go over there in a little while.
Okay.
We're going to walk over there before the hour is over just to look at that stuff and not spend a lot of time there, but do a little bit.
And you asked for reactions. I don't want anybody messing with my junk.
Well, I think I messed with your junk
you're
a little bit.
You're going to have to put a rope around it.
But that's what we're going to do is go mess with it, and you can deal with the people that might have messed with your junk. Politely say,
it's my worthless stuff.
This one was mine. That's right. The other thing I'd invite you to do, if you didn't go up on Monday and you want to go up between today and tomorrow, or I think our session is later in the late afternoon tomorrow, there's a 7:30 session tomorrow that's going to be the same exact lesson or session as the late afternoon one for staff. My decision as a teacher will be to see who comes at 7:30, and if people come that haven't been to any of our sessions, then I got some other ideas that I'm going to go with. So I have to be able to go with who's here.
Mm-hmm.
But the session in I think it's 5 even, tomorrow afternoon. Is that right? I have it here.
Is it 7:30 in the morning?
Yeah. 7:30.
And but someone's driving?
We won't go to the third level, no.
Oh.
So I'm at, it's 3:45 tomorrow. So the 3:45 session is, in the design of things, supposed to be the same as the 7:30 session. It's a repeat.
Okay.
And that the rationale is for staff who work here, who work during the day, they try to have 7:30 slots spread throughout the week to help staff participate in sessions if they want to attend before work starts. But like I said, if people come here who weren't part of the other things, I've got some other things we can do, and if there's a mix, I know how to do that too, I think. At least I know how to try. At any rate, tomorrow afternoon, for those who have things, we'll be actually starting to glue and nail and fasten and wire the thing you want to make. Now don't let, if you're worried about, or if you're thinking dismissive thoughts about, well, I don't really want to take anything home anyway because of the weight or size or stuffness or airports, if that's deterring you in your mind, I'd say don't let it deter you, because we can always find a place around the village for something that you may, a humble place or not. See what I'm saying? I'm not going to let you use that as an excuse, in other words. You can feel free. And then if you make something and you want to just dismantle it or throw it in the water symbolically as some forgiveness and repentance kind of thing, do that too. So now I want to show you some slides of some of the stuff I've made over the last couple of years.
Can you find the thing?
So
she found the floor.
Mom, could you get that Venetian blind for me, please? And turn off the lights. I'm sorry, I didn't let you respond. I asked you how it went for you, didn't I?
That's okay.
And then my mind lurched forward. So, yes.
I didn't go up to third level with them, but I sort of know the stuff and what it's like.
Right.
And I think picturing all the stuff, it seems, all the stuff is so tangible and permanent, basically. But the feelings that all these give you, says for a second, it seems so temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Like the feelings, and they touch us and move on. And that stuff is so permanent, but it's such a temporary feeling.
Right.
It just sort of passes on. It's just kind of weird.
Yeah.
Messes with you a little.
Yeah. And then if you see the same object again, it might touch you in a different way, or
yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And temporal. Thank you.
I didn't go up either, but I haven't noticed the stuff, and it seems like in the poem, every line, it has a story. It's not
mm-hmm.
saying just jasmine, just mm-hmm. rose. It's not saying like just
right.
the smell. It's like in November the smell of this, or the key that opens the house. It's like the key is the object, but then there's a house. What's in the house? Whose house is it? You know, it's like it's a little introduction to a story that you don't really know. So, it seems that all the objects are like that too. It's like something that, like a gear that used to be in some machine that you have no idea what it is. You know, it's like it's just a little glimpse into a story that you want to know what you're doing.
Yeah, it's got this story and a history.
He's gonna write a poem on each line.
Well, you could write a story from each line, yeah.
Yeah,
and I think the poem is sort of mysterious, evocative of, and lets you fill in your own, you know, what would be my stories behind my, your, what are your objects, and then are there new objects for you too? Others?
Oh, it was fun looking at the stuff and kind of imagining what they could be, you know, like the different colors of the wires, how kids color their hair today, and and some of it's kind of that matted stuff, and just, you know, and then I found that radiator thing, and I guess I'm kind of into hair, or but bent pieces, and rusty, gnarled things, and, you know, kind of like how life can be.
Rather than everything having a story, I think maybe we fit everything into our stories.
That's it.
Absolutely. And we weave stories into everybody else's stories, and and sometimes we delete parts of the story. Oh, don't say that. Don't tell that part, you know, of the omissions. And it goes back to that quantum thing again from the matins or the morning meditation that you read, I think, that is very fluid.
I'm looking forward to seeing the examples of your work, because I'm staring at this. It has very strong messages for me, and I'm going to avoid using them. But you know, in trying to think of how I'm going to put together the objects I brought down, you know, there has to be a dialogue between wanting to impose something on them and allowing them to become whatever they're going to.
Absolutely. That's a tough one.
Yeah,
that is hard. And there's a lot of when I try making these things, I'll put something together just in a flurry, and then I go do, and I usually have four or five little stations in my garage where I do this, and then I turn my back and look at one I was just, and I kind of liked it, but now I hate it. And it's, so you have to walk away from them, come back, and see over time for me. And everyone's process is going to be different. It's one of the reasons I've avoided welding, I think, because welding is, you know,
you're stuck.
You're done. Yeah. It's more.
Besides,
of a,
it's heavy.
Well, I think there are. I'm going to do it eventually, but I'll have to. Something about it just seems too permanent mentally, too, as a.
Why don't you start out with like copper and what do they call that stuff, and just put it together, and then you just heat it up and take it apart.
Oh, solder.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see some of the things that I do are the solder would hold.
Well, it's a commitment.
That's right, it is a commitment. I never can remember where all the left switches are.
I find the bookcase.
It's just like welding.
Just like welding.
Does that work? No? Light.
Oh, thank you. Okay. I'm going to walk you through these. We're going to go, I have about 25 images of some things I've made in the last 2-3 years, and some, maybe 4 or 5 of these I've sold. I don't have them anymore. And my philosophy in doing this is to give away as many as I sell, which hasn't been too hard.
You know, there's some frames over in the bookstore. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. Now this one's called, I call this Transformer Man, after a song by Neil Young. And it's only about 1 foot by 9 inches or so. The boards, the wood slats I found here and there in one unit and took it all apart and made it as a backing. This one's fun to touch because you can play with it on the underside. I think I mentioned it on Monday where I tell the kids to, you know, push that up and it'll make you feel better. And it makes a nice little clicking sound. But something's pleasing to me, and somebody who found the, was it? Yeah, you found something real similar to the wires.
Oh,
are kind of fun and hairy or whatnot.
So fun.
It's not very complicated. The color, the contrast, simplicity, I just kind of like it.
Did you add the color, or was it that way?
It was that way. I rarely introduce color. I would rarely paint on something. This is about 3 feet by 3 feet, so it's large. It's very heavy.
What's on the back?
The backing is very thin steel.
Okay.
And I found this in the woods, and it's extremely dirty. I had to spray it off about 5 times. I love I zoom it in more if I could, but it seems to won't zoom any further.
I like that. You know, sometimes I like things, and I have no idea why.
Uh-huh. But that's called intuition.
They're really pleasing to the eye. They feel
definitely
good.
I absolutely agree. The way the rust plays on this, maybe the photo doesn't tell you too much, but the textures and the colors, and then there's a traffic-related thing on top that I don't really know where it came from, but that one I had, you see a screw in the top right and the top left of that mm-hmm. one? I wouldn't usually talk about all this stuff, but since this class is about making things, I'm talking a little more about the fabrication side. And then the lower yellow piece is about 3 feet thick and hollow from some kind of caterpillar vehicle that was abandoned. I think I got that one up here at Holden 2 years ago, the yellow part.
And you took it home, huh?
It hangs on my TV room. Yeah?
3 inches or feet?
3 inches. Did I say feet?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I wondered
about that. I'm glad you caught that.
But behind the nail heads, is there wooden?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good question. I put, I fastened 3 2x4s or so on the back. No, they're 2x2s.
Yeah.
On the back of that. So
okay.
It would pull out from the wall a little. There's little knobby things all around the border.
Oh,
actually, they have, they're about 2 or 3 inches long.
Oh.
And they stick out, and so you can actually pull them out too.
Oh.
What is this for you?
What is this? Mm-hmm. It's emotion. It's not a thing. So it's not. It's to me. This is intuitive. Like, how does this make me feel? I like the colors and the textures and the shapes. But that's what it means to me, probably. And the weight has some part of that. What did I title this? I titled this Road Weary. Some of it has a background in road work or in roads. And then there's that journey motif, I guess, for me.
Thank you.
You recognize the slats from the first one? Those slats came, I cut this puppy in half. Because it was too long. That as is, that's about 3 feet high.
Uh-huh.
It was about 6 feet high from some display thing at the Bon Marché. And so I took the leftover slats and made a backing for that one. But this one, I found the garbage can lid and the sand at Shilshoal Bay, Seattle. And it spoke to me. This garbage can lid all alone, lost its receptacle. But look, it's so modeled. It's so, the lid just, I don't know, it's just very pleasing to me. And
it looks like a crown.
These are some of these being saved by a humble windfall there.
That's right. That's exactly right. I titled this one Rorschach's Garbage Can Lid.
Oh, great.
So I don't know what that means, but that's what you can. I just love this, the way nature and people have modeled and weathered that thing. And then the display rack as well is once more a display rack. It was abandoned. It was, somebody said, we don't need it anymore. And then I said, well, let's display something with it. So there it is.
So no colors added by you.
No colors added, no.
Sorry.
This one, Welcome. This is called Occam's Putty Knife, as opposed to Occam's Razor. Anybody know Occam's Razor? Somebody must.
No, tell me.
Occam's Razor?
Yeah.
Come on.
Is he the barber? No.
Barber of Seville?
No. Occam was a 15th or 14th century philosopher, and he thought up a term, or an axiom, I guess, in philosophy that basically said the simplest way to solve a problem is probably the right way. I'm boiling it down here, but basically, to get to the truth, or to, if you keep simplifying, you'll get to the truth, is what Occam, I think it was a reaction in philosophy about over, making things over complex.
Overkill.
And if you get, if there's something about the nature of thinking and the nature of the world and problems that simplifying might be really the best way toward the truth. So instead of Occam's razor, I took the putty knife and thought, oh, this is Occam's putty knife. So, again, don't push the metaphor too far. I found this box up at the third level 2 years ago. You know, I guess, what do you call it, an old fuse box? Or there was actually a light bulb. See the light bulb socket in the top right corner? That was original. That's the only thing there that was original. I put another light bulb socket in for balance. The putty knife is just, it peels and flakes every time you touch it. It's so rusted and gone. So I had sympathy, not empathy, but sympathy for the putty knife and put it in the middle. It's central there.
The left-hand thing, a junction box?
The left-hand thing?
Yeah.
The top left?
The square, yeah.
That's kind of a cardboard junkie box that I found at the Salvation Army as is.
Oh.
On Monday, I think I mentioned that you have your Salvation Army in Spokane, and then you have your as-is junkie, what Salvation Army has rejected behind the Salvation Army. And that's your as-is Salvation Army rejects. So that's where I go to get, and that's a kind of a cardboard box that I think an old, something, some old.
It's a domino.
Yeah, and that's a domino inside of it. I put the domino in there.
That gives us proportion too. We can figure out. It's not very big.
Right, it does. And that's a roll of solder in the bottom left corner. So I'm telling you more than I would usually just show these images and let you make your own.
Oh, no, it's fun.
But since we're talking about making stuff, I wanted to tell you some of just the process for me and what I see. The putty knife was the key here. I just love the way it's just crumbling. It's just—it's still in quantum. It's like the woman said this morning. It's in flux. It's moving toward being something else. Now, this one's 3D. This stands on the part of a lazy Susan. I found an old lazy Susan, and I just took the metal rolling, the metal swivel thing away from it, put a hat box, an old hat box, on it, and then this rusty piece from Holden in the middle. What do I call this? Doesn't matter. Hat box for lazy Susan.
It's
a kind of a high-end hat box. So they wouldn't like what I did with it, or maybe they would. But it has a kind of a tassel that you tie around the box to secure it.
Right.
But I kind of think of it almost as a little mortar board.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it goes there, so there's something about graduation.
On the inside or podium?
I don't know. Something about it pleases me. It's not trying to be something.
Is the piece in the middle metal or?
Yeah, it's steel. It's about 3-4 inches tall, and it can't be bent. But there was paint on it, and a little rust, and it's just kind of the pattern. I can blame my mother for influencing me into modern imagistic expressionistic art. I kind of grew up with it. So,
the little rust goes a long way.
I didn't have representational art much in my upbringing, so if you're thinking ill thoughts of me, I can just, you know, throw it at my mom.
I'm used to it.
Yeah, let's keep going.
She's not in the audience.
Yes, she is. Yeah, she's right here.
Oh, you are.
Yeah.
Now this is an old.
That's cool.
That's a waffle iron. It's the frame of the waffle iron.
Yeah.
And it had been out in the as-is people behind the Salvation Army actually had gotten rid of this too, so it was way rejected.
Twice rejected.
So they paid you to take it away.
It was way rejected, which made me sort of happier to reclaim it. And I didn't know, it sat around for a long time what to do, but I found this book at a yard sale of Japanese no characters.
Yeah.
And it was very lovely illustrations.
Yeah.
With so this is sort of where I could mention Joseph Cornell. Anyone familiar with Joseph Cornell? A a New York artist who put everything he ever did in a box. This is sort of a box, but he took all sorts of clippings from magazines and art books and stuff and used all sorts of that combination. So here I took something from a book, an image, and put it in a unsuspecting place. So I like to find a way to marry the one object to a disparate object. So here's your no actor. And the Japanese, the no actors are pretty mysterious themselves. And the colors kind of go, I think, together. His sword, some of the lines kind of work. And it just kind of happened. I didn't spend days and days and days contriving it, but I think I mentioned, I'll say it again, on Monday, how when I write poetry, which I don't do a lot of anymore, but I used to, and poetry is probably my first love, but one of my big struggles with poetry as a wannabe poet was to the war between the rational and the intuitive, that the emotional and the rational sides of me were always at war, and kind of the emotional side was strong, but couldn't seem to ever get the upper hand with the rational. Whereas in making things like this, I found it quite by accident that I found this process, but that the intuitive had a lot more free hand and a lot more muscle. And I've enjoyed that for that reason. This one, it's about 10 inches long. So it's a small little red box that has some kind of an electrical function, and there was a little fluid, a weight thing. Anyway, I don't really know what the box was, but I like the colors on the side. It's plastic red on the side and metal. Again, the mottled, rusted look is kind of fun. I found the swirly object, whereas at the bottom, the middle and the lower level, that kind of has the four prongs. That's a separate thing, and then the yin and the yang little sign. And the oil can is from Salvation Army. Isn't the word Salvation Army kind of fun to think about, too? The Salvation Army. I don't know what the Mennonites will say, but... but the army image is throughout the scripture, too. The angel host is really the angel army, so there you be. This one's called what? Homage to Oil Can Boyd. Anybody know who Oil Can Boyd was? He was a pitcher for the Boston Red Sox. His nickname was Oil Can and his last name was Boyd. So there you go. Another look at the same one.
Now the other, this side, you chose this side because of the rust and the...
Yeah.
And the holes. The other side is all red then?
The two sides are all red. The back is kind of, there is no back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I tend to butt this up against a wall or whatnot, but it would have to be freestanding, I guess. I sold this one to a friend of mine, actually.
That's like somebody with a cocked head.
Yeah, I can see that. These are Holden items. Very heavy. It's about 10 or 11 inches in diameter, the bottom. I think it's from an old truck brake. Or something like that, or a transmission. Solid, would that be steel? And then the middle part, I think the middle bowl looking thing is from a desk lamp that got left out on the third level. Yeah.
The colors are great.
There's something kind of Japanese appearing to that about me as far as Japanese design. But I have yet to do it, but I want to put a frog in there, and maybe some, just a few flowers, not a lot of flowers. If that's not too female, that'd be okay if I do that?
Yeah.
Sure.
A variety of flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing. From above.
Oh, let's get nice colors.
Yeah, look at that tree in there.
Yeah, you can see more of the color there, huh? Nature's paintbrush. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, you tough, hard for us to duplicate.
Yeah. This is a similar idea. I found two or three of those desk lamp bulbs up at the third level. That's a square steel plate that's similar, but not the same as the railroad plates that they drive the stakes into.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a wire brush in the middle. This one. This is about 2 feet wide by, maybe 2.5 feet wide by 2 feet tall. It's an old wooden cover for a air return vent.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you know exactly where I'm at. And I use that as the backing. I have no clue what the top left corner thing is, but it's a metal deal. I think it has something to do with making concrete. Top right corner, the number 22, is from a parking lot that they tore down in Spokane, an old parking lot. Anyway, I found a way to blend all these things in. The title of this one, I call it, I Used to Be 22. So, who knows what? A friend of mine wants to name it in homage to Kazuhiro Sasaki, who wore number 22 for the Mariners. But I'm not going there. Now, remember the no, mystery no actor, the guy in the waffle iron? These are the waffle griddles that came out of that waffle iron. And this is rare, but once in a while, if I see something in a retail store that I really want and I want to buy it and use it, I buy it. These are from Pottery Barn. They made some salad plates that had dice on them. So those are just salad plates from Pottery Barn. That's cool that they did that. Anyway, they go together. I like them together better than separate. A friend of mine bought these and they're in her kitchen. I thought the kitchen was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And you could turn them any way you wanted. What did these call? Call these?
How are they displayed?
In her kitchen?
On a wall?
Yeah, they're on a wall. I connected some wire on the back so she could hang them.
Uh-huh.
And they're glued. I use a lot of epoxy. I use a lot of epoxy, and tomorrow we'll break out the epoxy if you want to go do the making part. And I use a lot of wire, this little thin, very thin iron wire to fasten things. And sometimes you drill a hole from behind and fasten something that way. But next. This is about 18 inches by 18 inches, so it's not real big. That's a scrubber brush, like a janitorial. Get on your knees and scrub the floor type of brush. I called this brush with depth, which is a term people use, right? A lot of these kind of symbols do have a depth implication or overt depth implication. I think this, the minute you think about corrosion and rust and, you know, things that have sort of become dead that can be recreated or renewed or transformed. I don't know. There's a lot of the pleasure here is just finding objects that sort of work together in my brain, in my eyeball. And doesn't mean they will for you. Sewing machine part, right? Mm-hmm. On the left?
I was going to ask. Yeah.
That's one of those, I think what they made from some kind of the old sewing machines, mold, would that be iron or
cast
iron? I had to break that and break that and break that. Of course, you wear goggles. But I finally got the piece I wanted out of the sewing machine. Now look what the rust has done to that. And the gas, it's just a 7-inch street hole cover for a gas line that was thrown away when they put in the new hardened plastic kind of glass gas covers, you know. But I just love the way that, that's another one, the box, that just crumbles as you touch it. It's so rusted out. But something about it pleased me. And I found a way to hang it on a wall too, which might be funny, but there you go. I call that one gas laws.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to stabilize any of this rust with coatings?
No, I haven't. I haven't. I could, someday I might want to though, just to, this is my 9/11. It's called Lament for 9/11, or September 11th Lament. And it's very small, it's about 4 inches by 4 inches. But something, I want it to be small because it was such a big thing. And everything about 9/11 was so, the scale, emotionally, and the scale, human life and world events and how it just keeps rippling around in our history right now. I felt it had to be small. To try to make something big would be pretentious, or my part in it is small. Obviously, I'm small, everybody, but I don't know, something about the red plane and the green light spoke to me, and I put these three things together. The other deal is just from, it's from the guts of an old adding machine, the springs that would be connected to the keys. That's an old metal drawer that had gone to rust in the backside of the as is and the Salvation Army. And I just flattened the sides of the drawer. It looked a little like a triptych. So this, the left and right portions kind of flare out a hair. You can't really tell that from the photo. And there's a little ball peen hammer there, and an airplane gauge from an old airplane that I bought for $5 at a garage sale. Susan Sontag is there. She, kind of a writer that's influenced me a bit, died about just less than a year ago, she died. Kind of a social critic and social commentary and philosopher and author, novelist. I grade the photocopies of the photo of her, I did kind of gradation and darker and lighter. The main reason, because she was a friend of Joseph Cornell, who I mentioned earlier. As a right out of college reporter, she got to know Joseph Cornell, who was a recluse at the time, and became a friend of his for many years thereafter. So there he is. I kind of bridged Cornell and Susan Sontag together.
Is that a piece of fabric up there on the top, or?
It's a leaf.
Oh, a leaf. Okay.
Yeah, it's a leaf and some rusted wire.
All right.
Yeah. That's the lid of some kind of an old drum, and do you call that a draftsman, draftsman's ruler that's triangular?
Triangular, yeah.
Yeah, it's a three-dimensional triangular ruler. Just like the combination of these. This one's maybe 3 or 4 years old. I did this a while ago. Kind of fun. Wood. That's a piece of wood at the top with the spring on it.
Why did you put it up on end?
I don't know. I just liked it that way.
Select an architect.
Yeah, I don't know what this is titled. Let's see if I can find it. This one's called Gnostic Secrets, the Best Kind. So.
Is that just a piece of rusted metal under the ruler?
Yeah.
Just laying there?
Yeah, like a hinge. I think it's a hinge.
Oh, okay.
With a latch, like a latch hinge. One of my favorites, I don't know why, probably because it's baseball. This one's called Squeeze Play, which is a baseball play. I crushed this baseball to fit it into an old, old, old lens from an old, old, old slide projector. Early, early kind of slide projector. So I smushed the baseball into there, and then these other iron things have something to do with concrete work or hot carriers. And up at the top you have some checkers pieces with crowns. You can't really see the crowns on them. And it's just an old fuse box cover, the rusted background. That's maybe 2 feet high. This is a triptych that I sold, actually. In the middle, you can see the word rat trap, like they had to tell you, huh? Mm-hmm. This is a rat trap. And with the little graphic, you see the red picture of a rat with the eyes. Rat trap triptych is what I named it. It's an odd assortment of things. Left and right, you have two different airplane gauges from old airplanes, where the one says rudder angle or rudder this or rudder, very primitive airplane gauges. Some bamboo in the middle, a bamboo on the left. I just had some fun with arranging these. What I really liked about these, I better look at my clock too. Who has a watch?
4:38.
Okay, we're not gonna go outside today, are we? That's all right, we'll catch you up. What I really liked about these boxes is that they were baker's drawers from an old baker's desk or cupboard. So they're only about that deep, the drawers, and the bottoms of the drawers are just rusted metal. That's very, very thin sheet metal, or probably tin. So they were, it's rare to find any drawers like that. I got lucky. This is another use of an old drawer. This is an older piece I made a while ago, maybe 4 years ago. It's called Spit, Salt, and Fire. The fire you can see images of in the reds and the spark plugs. The Vulpine hammer is more mottled than you can tell in the picture, but it has an amazing speckled blackness on the handle. And the salt shaker is upside down. Spitball is the allusion to the old spitball, I guess. Anyway, having fun. Very intuitive.
The picture, where did you get that?
That's a postcard, and it's a Jacob Lawrence painting of a Negro Leagues pitcher. It's not Satchel Paige, but it reminds you of Satchel Paige. I love baseball. I hated baseball for a while because it was, I don't know, I was supposed to not like baseball, and I bought into that. How come you like baseball? I said, oh, I don't. But then I realized I did, so. I mean, that's tame compared to telling you that I like this stuff, right? This one has some emotional weight for me. The congregation, the last congregation I served was called St. Mark's Lutheran, Spokane. And this was the service book and hymnal altar book at St. Mark's. So the pastor would use this in the altar. It's larger, right? Dad, you would remember these from the SBH, service book and hymnal. How many remember the red hymnal?
Some of us?
So they gave me this altar book not knowing that I would drill it and put it onto these. What I did is I joined the two kind of cupboard-like things. And let me walk over here. We'll be done in 5 minutes, I promise. These two metal pieces are flimsy enough so you can turn the page and display whatever you want for that day. So for a couple of years, I had this by my front door, and because the Psalms, all the Psalms are in there, all of those prayers, what we used to call the collect, at the introit, all those. So I would have fun just opening up to whatever page, leave it there for a day or a week or whatever. But the nice thing too for the presiding minister, there's a lot of red letters and things in red and things in black. And they did some care with the scroll work, and what the word rubric actually comes from that, the red letter. So you'd have these big, large letter, like the letter I there, the B. Those are actually rubrics, where the word rubric comes from the word red, which you have the red here. These things here and here hold those two boxes together. I don't know why number 8. I just liked it. It looked a little less busy than some of the other numbers. Can you read this here?
Mm-hmm.
What does it say?
Wherefore we flee for refuge to that infinite mercy.
A phrase, I can just hear that. I grew up, I probably missed church 4 times in my life before I was in high school. And of course, if you remember the red book, that was right there at the beginning, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Wherefore we flee for refuge to thine infinite mercy. Oh, that's a great line. And I just wrote it in my own hand.
Yeah.
And throughout the book, I kind of wrote some of those other kinds of things. Not to mention all the little reading tags, the little, what do you call them, the bookmarkers.
Yeah.
Those are fun to play with, too. St. Mark's again. This is called, where is it? There are only 2 more, I think. Griffin. This is called Griffin and St. Mark's Gospel. Every gospel, all 4 gospels have a symbolic animal type of part animal, part whatever. Did you know that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Who can name the animals for other gospels? Say what?
There's like one with horns.
Yeah, I think that's John.
No, isn't John the eagle?
John's the eagle, you're right.
The ox and Matthew's the man.
Thank you. You say them.
Matthew. What was the other one?
Matthew is a person.
A person, oh, yeah.
This is, St. Mark is the griffin. And there's an image of a griffin, obviously. I found this. See the top green spiky thing is a flower frog, flower frog, very heavy metal, probably a lot of lead, right?
Those are wonderful. I want that for my flower arranging.
Yeah. And then a bell, the bells from the guts of an old doorbell, some wires. Wires are fun. I knew right away when you picked the wires the other day, and just a piece of green wood on the side. That's probably about a foot high, no more. But homage to St. Mark. St. Mark's has been just a blessing to me in thousands and thousands of ways as a congregation. So I would make as many things as I needed. And as a wondrous thing that St. Mark's does in Spokane, they have a 1-month art show that they call Artists Among Us. And if anybody in the congregation who wants to show something they made, you're getting away from formal, card-carrying artists, but people that have something they think, I want to throw this in the mix. We do that every year at St. Mark's. Just a hammerhead. It's a Japanese box with some Japanese writing on the side. And the Japanese are very, if any of you have been to Japan,
beautiful boxes.
They like to use boxes. It's very lightweight, probably pine, almost like a balsa wood feel. But the box is very delicate with this very heavy, kind of ugly, beat up, rusted, kind of a disparity thing, I guess. But I love hammerheads, and I have about 15 or 20, maybe more, old hammers. But people bring me hammers. Do you like this one? It's not old enough. Come back in 20 years or age it. You can't really age these things, can you?
Uh-uh.
You have to find it or it finds you. I think this is our last one. This is called Leaf and Fuse Are Friends, a pun on a title of a book that I used to read to Leif and Nils. Remember Frog and Toad?
Yeah.
Frog and Toad are friends? This is Leaf and Fuse. A dead leaf and a dead fuse. The fuse is never good anymore, is it? Once it does its thing.
Yeah.
And that's in an old clock, an old bedside clock. In the back side of the clock, I just tore out the guts and used it as my frame. The leaf came from California in Ben Lomond, in the back. It's kind of a family house. Last but not least, there's an old telephone. I forget where I found it. The wrench, see the wrench?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very much gone to rust. It's easy to get these tools that have gone totally useless. People just wonder why you want it. And like, am I missing something? But then they give it to you, so. And that's kind of this one protrudes. It's about 4 inches, 3 inches from the wall. Thoughts or talk to me. Tell me what you think or concerns or medications that might help. it's not easy for me to do this with people. And 2 years ago, I kind of slid a bit of this on the side mm-hmm. with the poetry I was doing. Hang on 1 second to that thought, okay. Vaughn, I'll call on you. But I've gotten a little more brave and mm-hmm. a little more confident and having some fun, but it really helps me to integrate my intuitive, emotional sensibility about stuff or objects. And I really think that objects and things are kind of relegated a lot in our society. That even as materialistic as we are, they're very discardable. And whatever, when you get tired of it, chuck it. And the sacredness of things, that Christianity hasn't allowed for that very much. And I think it's a kind of an irony there that mm-hmm. things can be sacred without being worshipped. Mm-hmm. And they can lead us to a greater appreciation of God, inspire an aesthetic that inspires each other, all kinds of good things. Yvonne.
Thanks for sharing yourself.
Yes.
And all of this part of you that I didn't know anything about.
It's fun. Uh-huh. If you come to Spokane, call me and we'll go junking or we'll show you some stuff. Yeah.
How do you set prices?
Low. Because I'm very new. I'm not an established artist.
But I mean, where do you start? Do you look around at other things of that nature?
Well, I've seen some things that are similar to this in some magazines that are pretty highfalutin. New York type of magazines where they get $5,000 and $6,000, but I like to do like $57.99 or $79.66 today only. So I have fun with the prices.
A junk figure.
Oh, that's
wonderful. It's a junk figure.
Yeah, it's a junk figure, exactly. Yeah. And I'm not pretentious about it, and I hope I never am. Yeah.
The creation process that you use for these, just a comment, it looks to me like you've got some symmetry in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
true.
You don't have something thrown off on the right and nothing else in the picture.
True.
And I guess the question is, does it take you a long time to find the final piece of art that you have?
Sometimes. Most of the time it takes a while and a lot of exchanging and rearranging it. Like the process that we'll have to pick up with tomorrow of arranging, we'll have to fast forward that. Mm-hmm. But some like this one, that I can remember other objects I tried on this, mm-hmm. and other ways I tried these objects. So it took a while, and even fixing them. Most of those are bolted on from behind with nuts and washers and stuff. So I could change it, and I do have to live with it for a while to see if it's working for me. And then Bretta always gives me some feedback, too. Yeah.
Do you ever, this is like a 3D sculpture, and that's more like a painting. Mm-hmm. Do you ever do anything that moves? The artist at Pacific Lutheran University made some large pieces, and they all move, either in the wind or you can grab them and move them. And mm-hmm. and there's something about being able to touch them. That's
interactive. It's fun.
Yeah. Can you pull that thing down and make the bell?
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, I do.
And like the transformer one that you can touch, but not much of that. It's a good frontier for me to think about.
That's
movable
fun.
And whatnot.
Do you find it hard to let go of the piece? I mean, to not want to add something to it, to where it looks good, but well, maybe this would work here and that might work there, and because sometimes artists have a hard time of stopping.
It's this one thing I really enjoy about this is I kind of intuitively am able to tell myself whether that's just a construct, which what else could it be, but I can tell myself it's done.
It's done.
And then I'm done. And once in a rare while, I'll go back to something and undo it and kind of get to a point where I maybe don't even like it, or if you give it away, it's gone. But by and large, the pieces that I'm too attached to, I haven't given away or sold. There's a bowling pin that came from Holden 2 years ago that's from the old mining days that it's in the shape of a bowling pin, but it has no paint anymore, so it's all down to very, very, very weathered wood. Mm-hmm. And it's very gray, like weathered wood happens. I just love that bowling pin. And it's on, I got it in a, on a little thing, but I don't think I'm gonna part with that, at least not soon.
Do you use colors? Is that what catches your eye when you start to form your
colors,
your collage?
A lot of it. I don't add color much though, pretty rare.
Because I noticed some of your metals are, the colors that you happen to put together really work well if your slides are pretty true.
They're pretty true. I see the color. The color is very big to me, to my eye, and texture, and then shape. I don't have training in this, so I just kind of, it's very intuitive, but that's part of why I like it. Were you going to say something about it?
Art is never done. It only stops in interesting places.
Okay, thank you.
Say that again. Art is never done. It only stops in interesting places.
Yeah, I like that. Who said that?
She did.
Picasso. Well, we'll go here and then here.
No.
Do you display this in a room in your house or in various rooms or in your garden?
A bunch of rooms. The TV room is kind of, has a lot, and then here and there. And a couple things in the patio outside.
How about the bathroom?
Yep. There's one in the bathroom, above
right
the toilet.
The toilet.
So the guys get to look at it more than the gals.
Oh, that's great.
Yes?
For me, it's a real Jesus thing, and it's finding beauty in what society has discarded.
Yeah, I agree. I feel that way strongly, and I don't know that I, you know, that didn't inspire me to do that, but I feel that, that my theology and my faith can connect to this too. And you know, a lot of people talk about reincarnation nowadays, and I prefer to think of it as re-creation. That gets into theological fine points, but
redemption.
Yeah. That the thing is not something else, it's re-created. Anyway, that's another session. You've been very patient and very cooperative. Thank you.